This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is Trey. Thank you for joining us for our Thursday podcast, the one that I share and do with Miss Mary Langston. We are well into April. The Masters is right around the corner. I guess March Madness is still, there's still a little bit of madness left. And we just celebrated Easter, and I hope you had a wonderful Easter. I'm going to take a wild guess. This is a somewhat educated guess, but a wild guess that you were at church on Easter, Mary Langston?
I would say your guess is correct.
Yes, that's what I that's what I thought. And the Sunday before that, and the Sunday before that. And
well, you know, I miss sometimes, but this
not on your own volition, you do not. But I hope you had a good Easter. I'm sure you were with your family.
Well, thank you. I hope you did too. I'm thinking you were with your family too. I saw some pictures.
Yes. When I heard that you did not like the Easter Bunny, or someone dressed as the Easter Bunny was at the restaurant where my mom and dad wanted to eat afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I convinced my wife to take a picture. She doesn't like pictures any more than you do with this Easter Bunny. I said, we're going to send it to Mary Langston, which she thought would be sweet. She did not know that I only did it because you have an unreasonable fear of people in the Easter Bunny costume. So my motives were awful. Her motive was sweet, but we wound up committing the exact same act.
Exactly. It was funny and sweet at the same time. And it was a great picture of the both of you. But it made me laugh. And
not really. It was a good picture of her because there's no such thing as not one. But I just when I saw it, I do not like pictures. You know that better than probably anyone else. But I couldn't resist. And I don't know. I mean, I've had some curious jobs before in the past. One for 8 years for sure. But I have never had a job dressed up as like Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus. So I don't know what that would be like.
Mm-mm. Me either.
Well, let's make a pledge to one another that we won't. Can we do that?
That sounds like a great pledge, and I'll try to avoid them at all costs.
Okay. Well, all right.
It's a great picture, and I appreciated y'all sending that. It was funny and sweet, and
sweet on her behalf because she had no idea the evil that lurked in my heart, and that I knew that you did not like that it scared you as a child to see the Easter Bunny. So
right.
That was my motivation.
Tell on her face that it was an authentic smile. It was not. Oh, I don't know about this.
She never would have taken the picture if she thought you were scared of the Easter Bunny. You know her. She would have said, "I'm not doing that. That's mean. Why would you do that?" Which is why I ended the last podcast by saying I'm probably not going to see y'all on the other side, and now you know why. No. Because I just do awful things like that. But maybe there'll be a question about that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I hope everybody else had a wonderful Easter and a great weekend. And I've had a good week so far. We always look forward to hearing what's on your minds. We have another great set of thoughtful questions today. So we'll start with Vicky in Arizona, who writes, I want to vote against one of the Gang of Eight in my state who ousted McCarthy. Unfortunately, he's running unopposed except for his Democratic opponent. How can I show my disapproval and what do you recommend?
Vicky from the great state of Arizona, She, of course, is referring to the eight members led by the congressman from Florida named Matt Gaetz, but she is referring, I think, to Eli Crane, whom I never served with and don't believe I've ever met. By the way, Vicky from Arizona, I talked to Kevin McCarthy, and not that you ask, but he is doing extremely well, and he is very, very happy. And has found life after politics. But your question is, how do you register your disapproval with someone when that someone is unopposed? And what I would say is what I've also done in the past, which is write in the name of someone that you think has the qualities that are desirable in a representative. There have been a number of instances over the course of my life where I wrote a name in or left a contest blank. I am not going to vote for someone with whom I am not ideologically aligned. So I'm just not ever going to, like, I'm not going to, however much I may not like a, I don't want to say a Republican candidate because I have voted for Democrats in the past, but however much I may not like someone, I'm not going to vote for someone who is even worse to register my disapproval. I'm going to write in a name, which I have done several times. I'm going to leave it blank. The House depends on being in the majority, much, much more so than the Senate. So I just would not enable a party with whom I had nothing in common to be empowered to send a message to someone that I have little in common with or am otherwise upset with. So, you know, I'm not going to empower someone I have zero in common with to punish someone that I have 50% in common with, if that makes sense. But I also, and this is how you can surely tell, Vicky, that Easter is over. I would not forget. I'm not great. Well, I may be okay in some instances when it comes to forgiving, but I have a very good memory. Politicians actually count on us having short memories. That is one thing they bank on, that our anger will subside, that we will move on. In fact, interestingly enough, the ringleader of the Gang of Eight counts on that too. He gave his critique, which is always ironic when he gives his critique of human nature. He recently said, in the primary, we fall in love, and in the general election, we fall in line. I found that so bitterly interesting, since he himself did not do that. You know, Kevin McCarthy won the primary last January. He was the nominee for Speaker of the House. He won 86%, I think, of the vote. And the troops did not fall in line. So the notion that you fall in love in the primary, but you fall in line in the general election, they themselves did not do that. They made his life miserable. They made a mockery of the party for what, a week in January? They made Kevin grovel, which made the party weaker, the conference weaker. They insisted on this one member motion to vacate, which is what ultimately undid Kevin. And now someone else has filed a motion to vacate with respect to Speaker Mike Johnson. All of this is the fruit of the poisonous tree. It all started in January of 2023. When, for reasons I'll never understand, because I'm not a psychiatrist, people just engage in self-sabotage. They intentionally weaken their own brand, their own party, their own ability to govern. So don't just remember the eight who were running the gallows in October when they, you know, put an end to Kevin McCarthy's political career. I want you to also remember the 12 to 15 who built the gallows in January. People are counting on you moving on, Vicky. They're counting on others moving on. And I'm telling you, don't. If you want to make the party better in the long run, you cannot reward self-destructive, self-sabotage, self-loathing behavior. And maybe it won't be this cycle or the next, but eventually you will have a chance to express yourself. And as we learned in the Count of Monte Cristo, revenge is actually a dish best served cold. So maybe you cannot express your disapproval this year, but you can certainly do it in the future. I do allow people the opportunity to change and admit their mistakes and ask to be forgiven. I always allow people the opportunity to do that politically and otherwise. But I have seen zero contrition on behalf of those who did what they did to the Republican Party, both in January and October of last year.
Well said, and thank you so much for answering that. Thank you, Vicky, for that question. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Our next question is from Carl in Iowa, who writes, what's the answer for Washington's gridlock?
Well, Carl, from the great state of Iowa, which I had the pleasure of visiting not all that long ago, I think some gridlock is by design. It's by intent. Our founders wanted it hard to pass legislation. Change should carry a heavy burden of persuasion, I think is what they would tell you. You know, what we have now, I would actually say, is not gridlock. It's just an utterly dysfunctional stalemate. And the reasons for that, you ask what's the answer. We have to understand the reasons for that so we can then formulate the answer. Neither side will allow the other side a victory. Neither side. It is just, they will do anything in their power to deny the opposing side the ability to claim any kind of political victory. It used to be the race to replace began immediately, that if you had a president or a senator or a member of Congress that you didn't like, that, you know, the race to replace kind of began the day after the election. But now it's even more than that. It's a race to impeach, or a race to do what the Democrats in the House, in my judgment, did to President Trump, which is to cast a shadow, an investigative shadow over his entire first term, which weakens your ability to govern. So it's actually worse than gridlock. It is party politics over everything. It is this awful combination of self-loathing of the legislative branch coupled with narcissism. It is this abdication of the legislative branch to the executive branch or some other branch, which creates a monster that just wants to feed its respective bases all the time. And that's what you know, politics, I think, has ultimately become, that the base has to be fed all the time, every single day. 99 is a failing grade. And then I'll give you an example. Mike Gallagher. I don't know how many people know Mike Gallagher. And look, Mike Gallagher and I voted differently. We see issues differently. But anyone who doesn't think that you would want someone like Mike Gallagher to continue in public service has never met him. But 99's a failing grade. He can run the China Committee. He can do all the hard work that's behind the scenes. He can build collegiality, bipartisan solutions. But the first time he does something that the talking heads or the, you know, quote, conservative thought leaders that have never been elected don't like it, then he fails. So if 99 is a failing grade and the goal is to become famous and get reelected, then what you have is not gridlock. It's just flat out stalemate. So this is the way I look at it. Significant change requires a mandate. A mandate requires more than just a bare majority. A significant majority is what is required for a mandate, and a significant majority requires persuasion. I mean, real commonality among voters. Right now, we have presidents winning while losing the popular vote. We have dead heat ties in the Senate that have to be broken by a vice president, and a one-vote margin in the House. That is not a formula for real transformative change. But yet the bases in both parties are told, if we win, we're going to fundamentally change this and that, and it cannot be done in that environment, nor should it be done in that environment. What you ought to do is the heavy lifting of persuading people who don't currently agree with you. That's how you build a mandate. When you stop and think, Ronald Reagan, who I'm not even sure would win the Republican primary anymore, but he won every state except the home state of his opponent in the District of Columbia. That is a mandate. There hasn't been one since. And what people do now is just identify like-minded people, hope that it is barely enough to prevail, and you get what my friend Carl from the great state of Iowa calls gridlock and what I call dysfunctional stalemate. Some of this slowdown is by design. If you're a small government conservative, then you don't judge legislative success by how many bills you passed. But I mean, what D.C. has become is like dueling banjos. It's dueling impeachments. But they impeached Trump twice, right? So, I mean, they cast a shadow over his entire first term in office, Schiff primarily, but others. And the media played right along, and then the media wants to know why the country is so divided. So just, Carl, remember this. If you don't remember anything else I ever say, and there's a pretty good chance that's going to happen, but Congress reflects. Congress reflects. It doesn't lead. It reflects what it thinks the rest of the country wants. So it doesn't sound to me like that's what you want, Carl, from the great state of Iowa. But Congress will only change when the voters require it to change. Right now, they think that this is what you want.
Well said, Trey. And it sounds like we left D.C. at the right time. But thank you for answering that question. Our next question is from Craig in Alabama, who writes, what are your thoughts on March Madness so far?
Oh, amazing run by Clemson. Clemson men's basketball team. Amazing run by NC State on both the men and women's side. UConn on the men's side looks dominant. UConn on the women's side. So many injuries over the past couple of years. The fact that they're where they are. I mean, they have a really, really, really good player. Who's the best player in the country between, I think it's pronounced Buckner, Paige Buckner, you know who I'm talking about. She's really, really good. Caitlin from Iowa is really, really good. Baylor and South Carolina got out early on the men's side. So I've been focused more on the women's tournament, actually, where it's been, you know, a little bit, correct, from the great state of Alabama. Speaking of which, Alabama men went on a nice run. On the women's side, a lot of the attention has been on all the wrong things. Washington Post story on Kim Mulkey, which had almost nothing to do with basketball. And, you know, I mean, obviously people know I'm biased towards her. I read it. When I got through reading it, I guess that my dominant question was why and why now? Why are you discussing family matters? And anyone, I mean, God knows if you wanted to go find people that have worked for me or worked with me over the entire career where I've had, you know, I had 60 something employees when I was the solicitor. I had, I don't know how many employees when I was in Congress. I've had coworkers. I've tried cases against people. If you wanted to go find 10 people to say unpleasant things about me, it wouldn't take you that long. If that's what you set out to do, it wouldn't take you that long. Now, if you wanted to write a fair balance story, you would talk to coworkers and folks that work with me, I hate to say work for me, work with me that had, you know, both opinions, both positive and negative. It was a completely one-sided story. I just wonder why it was time to do the maximum amount of injury and pain to her. Then there's an LA Times article that said despicable things about the LSU women's team, things that you would really never say about a men's team. He apologized for it, but why do you do it in the first place? I mean, I like the women's game because I think there's more sportsmanship. It's more teamwork oriented. There are very few players. Ashlyn Watkins can dunk. There may be some others that can dunk, but, you know, Ashlyn Watkins rarely dunks in a basketball game. So it's passing and it's teamwork and there's just this purity and this authenticity to me in watching the women's game. I mean, they're incredible athletes, but it's just different. The media just seems to want to turn women's basketball into either politics or professional wrestling. I mean, some of the questions asked of Kim Mulkey and Dawn Staley in their post-game press conferences are just designed for headlines and clicks and not to grow the game of basketball. I mean, look, I'm not a huge fan of some members of the media. I hope that doesn't take anybody by surprise. But this is why I'm not. It's people who know absolutely nothing about basketball telling Hall of Fame coaches what they should and should not be doing. Like, you know, an article accusing Kim Mulkey of taking her team off the floor for the national anthem. All that does is tell me you know absolutely nothing about her at all. If you don't think she's a patriotic person, you know nothing about her. They also did the same thing to Dawn Staley once. I mean, I hate to shock people in the media, but teams have routines. They follow routines. They run the same layup drills. They leave the court at the same time to go back to the locker room one more time to have either meetings or do whatever it is that they're going to do before tip-off. I mean, we have routines in life and habits, and then all of a sudden it's supposed to change because the NCAAs are made for television and television dominates. Anyone who thinks that Kim Mulkey took her team off the floor for the national anthem just doesn't know her. And so it's a waste of our time to write that story or to offer that criticism. I mean, there's another game that couldn't get the three-point line right. I mean, that would not happen to men. I mean, that's embarrassing that you can't get the three-point line right. They had to switch out a referee at halftime because they found out, I think she got a master's at one of the schools where she was refereeing. That doesn't mean she couldn't be fair, but you shouldn't put her in a position where people can challenge it. It's a rookie mistake. Shouldn't happen when you're playing for a national championship. I mean, what we should be talking about is UConn and what they've done to get through all these injuries, or how good Indiana and NC State played, and NC State's still playing. But for some reason, we just live in this culture that wants villains and they want good guys. And you know, they love some and they don't like others. You know, last year, they loved Angel Reese. They needed Angel Reese. So they create a megastar. And then what we see at the end, she's being interviewed. And that's what fame can and does to people. And then you wind up, as I'm sure she is right now, craving anonymity again. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to end on a high note, which is not like me, but I'm going to do it. Because as maddening as it is that they turn sports into professional wrestling and that they time these negative articles or negative comments, whether it's about Dawn Staley or Kim Mulkey or fill in the blank, or the young woman who was guarding Caitlin Clark, they just thrive on negativity. So here's what I'm going to ask people to do. I want you to go back and watch the young women interviewed after some of the games. Go watch some of the interviews. Yeah, you're going to say, I don't have time to do that. Just do it. Go watch the young women interviewed after some of the games. Because the coach is interviewed and then they have student athletes that also come out, and some of them are extremely disappointed because they've lost and their careers are over. Their college careers are over. And some are euphoric because they won and they go on. And there's one in particular that reminded me of the ending in True Detective Season 1 where Russ Cole said he thinks the light is winning. He's a very, very dark character. But he said, I was wrong. The light is winning. I want you to go watch a player from South Carolina named Tessa Johnson being interviewed. She was being interviewed along with Ashlyn Watkins after their game against Oregon State. You go watch that young woman's interview, and you will be renewed. Listen to her demeanor. Listen to the words that come out of her mouth. You go watch the coach of Oregon State interviewed and his players. Imagine the disappointment of losing and playing that well and losing and having to say goodbye. Go listen to the interview of Haley Van Lith, who was asked to do what no one has been able to do, which is to guard Caitlin Clark. Listen to Dawn Staley, who says she gives glory to God when she loses, just like she does when she wins. Listen to the positive stuff. It is out there. You got to go look for it. You got to find it. I wish the media would make stars out of people like Tessa Johnson and what she said in the aftermath of that Oregon State game, instead of doing these hit pieces and always looking for the negative. And they wonder why people are so down on them. All right, well, I'm going to follow Russ Cole's advice, and I'm going to think that the light is winning, and I'm going to try to remember. You would love it, Mary Langston. This young woman named Tessa Johnson that plays for South Carolina. You go watch her interview after the Oregon State game.
I will for sure, and I hope everybody else will too. Like you said, there are positive things in women's basketball, and they've gotten so much attention. I mean, more viewers than I think ever, maybe.
Yes.
So I hope
yes.
The positive stories will come out, because, I mean, even like Aaliyah Boston, who used to play for the Gamecocks, I mean, she's an amazing role model for young women, and she's continuing to do positive things, and the media yep. should, you know, take attention to that.
Well, I mean, it's like every other facet of life. I mean, the people who do good seem to get less attention than the rest. And then when you have the referee, which is what the media is supposed to be in our culture, the referee just going and looking for, I mean, criticizing Dawn Staley, who happens to be a devout Christian, mm-hmm. for what she said at, she played a game on Easter Sunday. You think she's forcing religion on her players? Go listen to Tessa Johnson. Go listen to Aaliyah Boston. Go talk to any of her former players. For the media to sit there and wonder why so many Americans view them as the biggest threat to democracy, even bigger than politicians, you don't have to wonder it very long when you see this story. What they decide and pick to write about.
Mm.
It's awful.
Mm. Well said.
But I'm going to end on a happy note. You go watch Tessa Johnson.
We will for sure. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back. Our last question is from Charles in California, who writes, how did your experience as a prosecutor inform your approach to congressional investigations? And were there parallels between legal proceedings and your work in Congress?
You know, Charles, that's a fantastic question. And the answer is no, there were no parallels, which is why I loved one job and really, other than the relationships I made for those 8 years, including with the young woman that I'm doing this podcast with, it just, I didn't enjoy the work much at all. It's nothing like the courtroom. I can't tell you how different the systems are. There's no judge in politics. There's a judge in a courtroom. A bad judge is better than no judge. I say a bad judge, even a judge where I disagree with his or her rulings is better than just the wild, wild west, the lawlessness of Congress where, you know, if you can get away with it, do it. In politics, the jury's already made up its mind. That's the one thing in the real courtroom that you cannot do. You have to wait to the very end. You have to be open-minded. I marvel at how juries can set aside their personal opinions and just simply base a verdict on what is presented to them in courtroom. The art of persuasion exists in the courtroom. You have to move people. I mean, remember, defendants are presumed innocent. You have to move them from that presumption of innocence to beyond a reasonable doubt. And that requires persuasion, which is never used in politics anymore. You think about congressional investigations. I mean, the power to subpoena is only as good as the power to enforce. If I needed documents from someone when I was a prosecutor, I either got a search warrant or I sent a subpoena, and it was delivered by a cop, and I got what I was looking for. In Congress, you go to court and spend, you know, years and years and years litigating, and then by the time it rolls around, nobody can remember what the fight was over. There's no process in politics. There are no rules of evidence. I mean, there are very strict rules. I mean, I think most people know what hearsay is. Hearsay is, you know, somebody else said something else, and it's not admissible in court with very few exceptions. But everything's admissible in a congressional hearing. There's no, like, fundamental fairness. The way witnesses are treated is entirely. There's more civility in a death penalty trial than there was in a congressional hearing. I mean, let that sink in for a second. I actually prosecuted a guy in a death penalty case who represented himself, which means I didn't get to talk to a lawyer in the mornings. I had to talk to him. So I'm trying to put him on death row, and I'm having to discuss the order of witnesses and how long I think this witness will take and when can he be prepared to go. And it's the most civil conversation. It was almost surreal to have a civil conversation with someone that you're trying to put on death row. There's more civility in a capital trial than there is in a congressional hearing. So my experience as a prosecutor, how did it inform my approach to congressional investigations? It told me what serious investigations look like juxtaposed with what congressional investigations look like. The parallels, there is none. I mean, one system, we call it a verdict, which is to speak the truth, and the other just wants to win no matter what. Doesn't matter what you say, doesn't matter what you do, the goal is to simply be in the majority. And the goal of the criminal justice system is to do what is right, what is just, and what is fair. And the goal in politics is simply to win. And one, you know, I hope people, you know, will remember that I did one, and I could care less whether people remember that I was ever in Congress.
Well, those are all the questions we have for today, Trey.
That was vast and varied.
It was.
We'll end on a happy note, which I'm not known for, but we're going to do it anyway. I really want you to, I don't care if it's Tessa Johnson or somebody else. I mean, I haven't watched them all. I watched South Carolina, but just the composure, how they handle defeat, their graciousness. There are so many things to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the negativity that seems to drive ESPN, the Washington Post, the LA Times. I just, for the life of me, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But go watch Tessa Johnson after the Oregon State game and see if that does not make you feel better about life.
We will do it. And it's hard to believe that they're so young, too, you know, to have that pressure and be in front of the media and have them talk, the media talk the way they do. I mean, it's just.
They're teenagers. They're teenagers. And they're, you know, look, the other moral of the story is, you know, fame. Just the pursuit of fame and how there comes a point where you realize how unfulfilling it is. And you long for anonymity all over again. Fame is just so fickle. It is just the most, it's a taskmaster. And those that a year ago were enjoying, you know, being the talk of the town and being in magazines and, you know, the world can change on you and you go from being famous to infamous to being notorious, and you feel like you're the same person. Mm-hmm. So I would just advise people that want to be famous. I'd have a hard time thinking of anyone I know that's really, really famous that wouldn't like to go back to being more anonymous. Mm-hmm. I'd have a hard time.
Mm-hmm. Well, beautifully said, Trey. And like I said, those are all the questions we have for today. And we hope that y'all will keep sending us your questions. They're always so thoughtful and keep us thinking each week.
They are. And I'm going to work on being pithier with my answers. I don't know. I just sometimes
complicated things.
Well, E equals MC squared is complicated too. And that was just like a simple formula.
Or 3 times 0 and 0 times 3.
Right. And when, you know, I guess it was Moses said, you know, who shall I say sent me? And God said, my name is I Am. Right. That's pretty simple. So the rare complicated things can be made simple. It's just I don't have the gift to do it.
We don't believe that, but we appreciate you answering the questions.
One of these days, we're going to flip it around. I'm going to ask the questions and you can answer them. And I think you'd be pithier and people would enjoy that more. And
I would just ask you a question back and then you would end up answering it.
Good. Then you've obviously read my book about asking questions.
Exactly. There you go.
All righty. Y'all take care. I'm Mary Langston. I will see you next Thursday, if not before.
Sounds great. We'll see you next Thursday.
All righty. Bye-bye. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.